Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Nonprofits. This show is brought to you by the Atheist Community of Austin. I'm your host, Russell Glasser. Jeff D. is out today, and filling in are my guests, Martin Wagner and Dennis LeBay.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Today's opening music was Sex in the Church by David Bowie, from the album The Buddha of Suburbia, brought in by Martin. We are live January 17th, 2004. The Atheist Community of Austin is a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. We have weekly meetings Sunday mornings at Hot Jumbo Bagel Shop, 307 West 5th Street, at 10:30 a.m., except for the first Sunday of each month when we have our lecture series at 12 p.m. in the Mayor's Room of the Austin History Center. The Bagel Shop will be open tomorrow. Or are we having our lecture?
No, it's tomorrow is lecture series.
Oh, well, I am stupid.
No, you made the same mistake I've done every time.
Right. And
the year began.
And I just remembered I've made another mistake, which was that on the previous show, Jeff said, my New Year's resolution is not to read regular announcements anymore.
Well, but that was what Jeff said.
Yeah, well, I made no such resolution. So continuing.
Yeah, you're safe.
ACA board meetings take place at 10 o'clock right before our regular meeting on the second Sunday of every month. These meetings are open to all ACA members, but you can only vote if you're on the board of directors. Those of you who shop at Randall's can give them our nonprofit organization number 5158 and have 1% of your purchase donated to the Atheist Community of Austin. The Godless Gamers meet every Monday night at 7 o'clock p.m. here at my house.
Everything happens here at your house.
Not everything. Actually, I forgot to mention that the monthly potluck will be taking place at Michelle's house.
Yes.
If you didn't know that, then get in touch with Michelle or me if you don't know how to get in touch with Michelle.
Oh, all right.
Of course, normally the potluck actually does happen here, but my wife is gone, and I don't know how to handle crowds.
Yeah. But this is still, when it comes right down to it, the official party house of the ACA.
True.
Yeah,
Godless Gamers, still meeting here. ACA Happy Hour takes place at Antonio's near Highway 35 and 183 every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. If you get there early and don't see anyone else, hang around. Lots of people trickle in as the night goes on. For more information, you can call our voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit our website at www.atheist-community.org. If you are listening live right now, then you should have already gone to www.atheistnetwork.com. But in case you didn't notice, there is also a chat link where you can sort of participate in the show. Although being the regular designated chatter and also being the designated host when Jeff is gone, those duties tend to interfere with each other.
Yeah, so.
But we might check out the chat room during the show. And
yeah, every once in a while, like if Dennis and I are talking about something, Russell might take a peek in there and see if...
Right.
But by all means,
plus, there are so many other incredibly cool regular listeners who who make the chat room an entertaining place.
Yeah. Wasn't it along the last show... in fact, I think this is the first time I've done two episodes of Nonprofits back to back.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And last one, weren't there like 50 people?
Oh.
Something? Or,
no, that 50 people listening.
But still a lot of people in the chat room, too.
Yeah, but our listenership is growing by leaps and bounds, and we're happy about that.
Yeah, Jeff played that episode for me.
Quite good. Welcome to all of our chatters, and if you're not chatting yet, get in there, damn it, and chat with each other. Because you do... save not only the MP3s of the past episodes, but...
Don't save the chat room.
You don't do that anymore?
This chat room does not support that.
Oh, that's right. It's a JavaScript thing. It's not the old ICQ.
Yeah, of course, go bug Reggie about getting a chat room installed that actually allows you to copy and paste. That would be nice.
Like something that has a log.
Well, I mean, if this one is easier on his bandwidth, though, maybe, who knows?
Yeah, right.
You've got to worry about that.
Yes.
You know, Reggie's awesome.
Don't criticize your service provider.
No, but I mean, he's...
No, I love Reggie.
He's doing this awesome regardless. So.
Yeah. Yes.
If somebody could just highlight everything and click copy and paste it into a Word document if you want.
No, I used to do that. You can't even highlight on anything.
Oh, you can't even do that?
See?
Gasp.
Yeah, so you would have to, like, type it in by hand. That would be a way to save
it. We demand that somebody upgrade the code.
Yes,
we would. While during,
yes.
make it available as open source.
Or any of you out there who happen to be a stenographer.
Yeah, by the end of the show.
Okay, well anyway, enough of that banter.
Enough of that carefully rehearsed ad-libbing.
So, should we do a news story first, or should we jump right into razzing on Ashley?
Oh, we're not going
to... No.
We won't razz on Ashley, but we do have some comments to make. We should probably preface it, though.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of people listening from out of Austin. I am ordinarily the host of The Atheist Experience, which is the sister show to the nonprofits, which is the Atheist Community of Austin's weekly live television show that plays here on cable access in Austin, Texas. And if you want to know a little bit more about that show as well as nonprofits, those of you who have been contacting Ashley Perrien, who's my co-host on the TV show, because he makes CD archives.
That would be atheist@mac.com.
That's right.
Write to him for archives of the show if I didn't mention
and
that.
And both shows on CD, although I understand now that with the new year, he's going to go to a quarterly format and they're going to be on DVD-ROMs.
Right.
And it'll be like, but we're also working on actually archiving the show itself as, you know, both sound and vision on DVD. Because what Ashley offers is just the audio tracks.
Right.
But anyway, there are, you know, we are the atheist TV show on cable here in Austin, Texas. And one of the few shows of its type in America. I think there's like one in Hawaii. There's another one that started up, I think, in Florida that someone had mentioned. Wow. So,
yeah, I was surprised because, you know, people from other groups are always writing to us saying, you know, how could we do something like that?
Right.
You
I think know? That we have inspired a couple of folks to try to do shows like The Atheist Experience. But of course,
get enough determined people.
There are scads of Christian cable access shows. This is,
there's a few of them.
Yeah. Well, there's
that I've noticed.
Yeah. Well, there's an entire channel here. There are three cable access channels here in town that are just public access.
Right.
And one of those three is entirely devoted to religious programming. They just put them all there.
It's like 24 hours.
Yeah. And that is, and that's on top of the, if you get digital Time Warner Cable, the five other 24-hour-a-day Christian channels.
Oh.
There's at least half a dozen 24-hour-a-day channels.
Right. And yet people call up to the one atheist show in the country and say, why do you guys have a show? What do you want to talk about?
Strange, funny thing.
Right.
But anyway.
We're so persecuted.
One of these Christian television shows sent us an email that I didn't get. I've only recently found out that for some damn reason Yahoo is putting all of my shows to the TV viewer feedback address in my bulk mail folder. Which means I now have to look in the damn bulk mail folder every day.
Oh, can't you fix that?
I tried to. I'm not quite sure how, because it's not that it's coming from a particular sender. I think it has to do somehow with how it's being forwarded. But anyway.
Take it to customer support, you two.
So that's why I didn't get that email originally from the hosts of this Christian television talk show who were invited us to appear because they were going to do a show on atheism. But Ashley did get it, and he went ahead and accepted the invitation. And although I will compliment him on presenting.
Ashley has been on this show before. You guys have heard him. I think he's still in one of the recent archive shows.
Yeah, maybe like from two shows ago or something.
Yes, and he's a heck of a nice guy. Yes,
heck of a nice guy, which can sometimes mean I think Christians take advantage of that when they're debating him. As in fact, we kind of saw that today, didn't we, on television? But. Anyway, I will praise Ashley for presenting what I thought was an image of positive atheism, right? He came on and he was cheerful and friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And, but unfortunately that kind of had its downside too. And so maybe later on we'll talk a bit about, not so much to criticize Ashley, but it's very instructive, when
Christian shows work when they're talking to atheists.
Right. Or just things that atheists should be aware of if you are ever invited by a Christian to debate him. In either a format that he controls.
In any
whether
format.
It's
extremely
or any format.
Dangerous.
Well, it's not that it's extremely dangerous. It's just that you just got to be aware of, you know, how they... there's an article in the most recent Skeptical Inquirer all about, you know, why skeptics hate debating believers.
Right.
Not just about religion, but if you're a Bigfoot person or a rub crystals, you know, to be healthy person.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's... The reason skeptics are so frustrated at debating those folks is just the way in which they'll pretend to be big fans of, you know, logical methods of, you know,
right. Well, it
reasoning,
is.
But they'll just. They'll abandon it. Well, but they'll just throw everything out there in the winds, and they'll pile rhetoric on high, in order to make it seem as if they've all got, you know, really nicely
reasoned out.
Particular show, this guy, I mean, you know, it was an hour long show. Supposedly they were going to take callers, but they didn't.
Never did.
This guy spent an inordinate amount of time rambling on and on about logic.
Yes,
which is one of my pet peeves, frankly. I hate when people talk about how they think, because that is so pretentious. You know, if you want me to see how you think, then present some arguments and let me discuss them.
State your position.
Kind of meta discussion, like, you know, not that he did this, but like people who say, oh, I have a degree from so-and-so, or, you know, oh, I studied logical thinking for many years.
Yeah. Talk about the...
Sound like such a moron.
Discussing the mechanics and the methods of logic and reason instead of just mounting an argument that employs those things and trying to see if the entire point you're trying to make is in fact sound. But it wasn't so much the pretentiousness of it all that got to me. It was that, prior to actually appearing on the show, I sent him a lengthy email. Hang on. Oops, I sneezed and it went away. Good. I sent him a lengthy email sort of saying, cautioning him, all right, based upon my experience, these are the main things I would look out for that they're going to try to pull. And they pulled the number one thing, which was shifting the burden of proof, which is a common onus that that believers will try to put on atheists, you know, shifting the burden of proof away from
the
theist.
Right, can you prove there is no God? Yeah.
But they did it in a different way that I hadn't seen before, and it was interesting. And that, well, what the host of this show did, right, was that in spending so much time, he talked first off, he went on this long-winded, rambling, and kind of
irrelevant
and self-contradictory way of discussing biblical passages that talk about evidence, and then going back to, okay, if you read the original Greek, or if you read the original Aramaic, and then, you know, playing musical translations to see which one you like the best.
Yeah.
Right? So there was that, and then there was that lengthy bit at the end of the show where he spent 20 minutes going on and on about, sounded like, about logic and the rules of logic.
Yes, so he was obviously an Ayn Rand fan.
Right,
he did. A is A, and non-contradiction says that A cannot be not A, and...
So
shut up.
The way he shifted the burden of proof was not through the usual way that I'm used to seeing Christians do it, but by saying, "Well, you can't prove there isn't a God, so you know, unless you know everything, right? You know, the usual." What he did was he changed the focus of the discussion to focusing on, first off, definitions of terms with the whole evidence and in the biblical term and the Greek versus the Aramaic versus the King James. There was definitions of terms and the rules of logic, and he tried to make those the central issue instead of what the central issue really should have been, which is, you know, is there a fucking God?
Right.
You know, and can you prove that there's a God? Instead, what he tried to do was he went on this whole rambling thing about logic, and then once he had gotten to where he was kind of satisfied with, you know, okay, he concluded, okay, well, I don't see how, you know, the atheist can, without the rules, you know, look at the rules of logic and not say that there's an absolute lawgiver. So since you can't say that, then I conclude that there couldn't be any laws of logic without an absolute lawgiver, which is, you know, nonsense, right? I mean, there's the one thing does not imply the other. And so since you haven't been able to formulate, to demonstrate how the laws of logic can work without an absolute lawgiver, I will thus conclude that there must be an absolute lawgiver, and I win. And that's how we did it. That's how
the thing I notice about a lot of Christian apologetics is that they're centered around the idea that you can prove things in a vacuum, that you can apply logic to nothing in particular, create tautologies, and prove that there is a God without referencing any actual evidence in the real world.
Yeah,
you know, that's what William Dembski's all about, right? Mm-hmm. He's a pure math guy. Yeah. You know, he doesn't refer to any positive evidence for anything. He just, you know, pulls out these you know, long equations with lots of Greek letters in them, and says, therefore, there is a God.
Yeah.
It's like
logic exercises
for
the sake of logic exercises.
Right.
Which is how you can prove that George Washington was a cat.
Yeah, and that, right. And that mention of lawgivers, he waited until the last 10 seconds to bring that up.
Yeah.
So there could
right.
be no rebuttal.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah, and that's another thing.
Wow.
And the reason some of us were expressing some frustration with Ashley is that what it was clear to us, the guys were doing, the hosts of the show were doing, I guess because we were, you know, the spectators.
Right.
Yeah. We could look at it objectively.
Well, they spent the first.
ranting and raving about
right.
what they were doing.
Right.
They spent the first half of the show, right? Everybody, they were just all being matey and chummy and pally, right?
Yeah.
And they were, you know, and it just was, and I'm just like, Ashley, they're softening you up, bud.
Right.
They softened them up.
Yeah, they said, here's some arguments that Christians make that we think are really stupid.
Yeah,
you know,
they went
Pascal's
on,
wager.
We're going to hand the atheist these things and say, all right, we'll concede that when Christians say this, it's dumb. And we'll concede that when Christians say that, it's dumb. So we'll hand you a fifth thing.
And then
how understanding we are.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, one of the ones they introduced was that Christians supposedly say all the time was, that's just the way it is. And we were all like, what?
Yeah, I've never really heard that.
That was out of nowhere.
Or that.
But you see, it was a setup for the end.
One could bring it up.
Yeah. Well, it was, but in the end, what they did was they put this argument in Ashley's mouth and then refuted it. Yeah, they basically said, since you've been saying that you use logic, you know, to justify atheism, it's like, Ashley said no such thing at any point in the show.
Right. They said, you've been talking about logic this whole hour is what they said.
He was talking about logic for the whole show. He was the guy talking about logic for 20 minutes.
Yes.
Not Ashley. And Joe McCrae, Ashley didn't jump in and say, what are you talking about? I wasn't saying that.
There was no time.
Yeah, no, I disagree with that. That's bullshit. You can always jump in and say, did you ever see that Robert Redford movie, The Candidate?
No.
Okay, there's this great scene in The Candidate where he pisses off, like, he's The Candidate is this movie, it's a Robert Redford movie, early 70s, right, which was a great time of political cynicism in America, where he is, He's manufactured by this team.
Right.
To basically just be a guy that they're going to run for the Senate for the hell of it because they know he can't win because the incumbent has this great record and he's got it in the back. So, for the hell of it, they're just going to run him as a 100% honest candidate. Because they can afford to. Because he's not going to...
Right.
Because, you know, the idea, they don't think he has a chance of running anyway. So what he does is, there's one scene where he pisses everyone off. Including this, you know, shoe-in opponent of his, because they're doing a television debate, and in like the last 10 seconds of the debate, Redford starts going, "Well, I want to know about, you know, what we're going to do to help the homeless. You know, what are we going to do about unemployment? That's what I want to talk about." It's like, last 10 seconds of the debate. Okay, I don't buy the thing that there's never any time. You can always. You know, get it in if you need to get it in, especially if you're being misrepresented. That's just defending yourself.
Yeah.
So, but I also warned Ashley that another thing that they would probably try to do would just do the whole thing of, you know, just rambling on and not let him get a word in edgewise.
And they did that in spades.
Hopefully Ashley will include this show with the latest CD so that people who at least listen to the CDs can know, can catch up if they missed this show.
Mm-hmm. You mean, and
can come to their own conclusion.
You mean the
one we just watched.
The Christian TV show?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if he'd have to get their permission for that.
I don't know.
We'll see. It is their show, and he does, you know, sell the CDs. So.
True.
But he could talk to them about that. I mean, because they're obviously all matey with each other. So.
Oh, yeah.
They're all buddies.
Again, I was proud of Ashley for presenting a nice image of an atheist to a Christian TV audience. He didn't come off the curmudgeon, the angry.
Yeah, he wasn't mean, and he wasn't, like, depressed, which is what they implied that atheists were at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Courage in appearing.
And it was very, 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 very spunky of him to do it. But, you know, he let him get away with some things that I don't think he should let him get away with. And, I'll be discussing this in some more detail also on the Atheist Experience tomorrow, because that's our show, and I can say whatever I want, and I can be however rude I want.
Mm-hmm.
And, because Ashley, because he is a nice guy, and that's a good thing for anyone to be. But sometimes in debating, the gloves have to come off, and that's a tough thing to learn. Took me a while.
You got
to
be a predator.
And I'm still not as, you know, just as, you know, take him to the mat, and, you know, and punch below the belt like Jeff D, right? I still, you know, I still try to, I try to be courteous, but I play hardball when hardball needs to be played.
Yeah. If Jeff had been on that show, it would have been very different.
If you guys have never heard Jeff D argue with somebody,
with a Christian,
is a sight to behold.
Yeah,
it is.
It's kind of like, you know, when Harlan Ellison goes off on one of his big tears and.
It's an action film.
But then at the same time, I've seen Christians take advantage of that, too.
Oh, yeah.
When Jeff was host of the TV show, which he was before he did nonprofits, we had a regular weekly caller, Steve the Creationist, right, every week. And when Steve the Creationist started out, right, I think, you know, he was really interested in trying to, like, discredit evolution and be like, oh, okay, guys, so there. And there was a real back and forth. After a while, though, I think it became apparent to me that he was just calling to amuse himself because he knew that he would get a rise out of Jeff.
Right, right.
That's the thing. I mean, Jeff can...
And it worked.
You know, I mean, and it did. And there have been times when Jeff has blown off the handle and then he's come back and we've talked and said, guys, remember when you were saying I flew off the handle? Well, yeah, I did.
Anytime where you get a venue where you can, where the public can call in, you get trolls.
But I totally understand why Jeff... You know, gets that frustrated and anger, except because when it is so patently obvious what the hosts of this Christian television show were doing today.
Oh yeah.
In terms of just they spun around literally for like half the show in this rhetorical cul-de-sac where they didn't really talk much about anything, and they were all just laughing and joking back and forth. And it's like, oh look, isn't it cool that the Christians and the atheists are all getting along?
Uh-huh.
And then that was all, you know, sort of the setup for the big shifting of the burden of proof at the end, where they turned the focus into, it is up to Ashley to meet the burden of proof for showing that the laws of logic can be defended without an absolute lawgiver, and if he fails to meet that burden of proof, then we win as Christians and God exists.
Right.
That's how they shifted the burden of proof to Ashley. And it frustrated me that he didn't catch that, and in fact, what really frustrated me, in fact, if I could have reached into the TV screen and like, walked him on the nose, I would have done it. It's like, Ashley, goddammit. Well, did you notice how the term burden of proof didn't come from anyone's lips during the whole show? No one said that phrase on the show, burden of proof. And the one person who should have said it was Ashley. And he should have said it in like the first 10 minutes.
Right.
And he should have realized when they kept trying to deflect and sort of like, well, now, when the Bible talks about evidence and blah, 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 you know, it's like, look, guys...
Yeah, they rambled immaterial. About Bible verses, and
yeah,
it's like,
this is
who
immaterial.
Gives a crap what the Bible says?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but just, you know, in George H. Smith, in his book, Atheism, The Case Against God, he talks about how a lot of Christian apologetics, where they go on the offensive against atheism, just end up being completely irrelevant because, you know, they go off on these tangents that don't really, that skirt the main
right.
issue. And, you know, that is kind of what they did today. But
yeah.
You know, we saw it. Ashley didn't see it. And I think that we need to – Ashley needs a little bit of boot camp before he takes over the host's chair of the TV show. To kind of toughen him up a bit. But but good for him for giving it a try anyway. So,
it was
I guess we've exhausted now that. So.
Okay.
All right. Well.
I had no
idea. That's out of the way.
My chest than I thought.
Talking about people on our side who might be a little too – willing to concede things to the other side for their own good. On our last show, we talked about Howard Dean trying to become more of a, you know, religious person.
religious guy.
No, wait, it's vote for me religion.
Yeah. Which I hasten to add may be a necessary evil if he's actually going to win the election because, you know, but I don't know. I mean, you know, he may be trying to get in touch with people who are never going to vote Democrat in a million years anyway.
Don't forget, Timmy, anybody can grow up to be the president of the United States.
Really?
As long as they're a fundamentalist Christian.
Oh, what?
Well, unfortunately, though, by trying to become all biblical, he just really embarrassed himself a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Well, because if people perceive that you're just doing it for political gain, although it's dishonest, it'll backfire.
Right. Here's what happened. As he heads into what H.L. Mencken called the Bible Belt, This is from an editorial by William Sapphire, who I normally don't want to hear from. But anyway, Howard Dean moved to plug an apparent hole in his resume about an interest in religion. And hearing Howard Dean's observation beginning, "If you know much about the Bible, which I do," a reporter asked about his favorite New Testament book. So Dean named Job. What's wrong with this picture, guys?
Don't.
Job is a Robert A. Heinlein novel? No.
Job is kind of the Old Testament.
Not only is it an Old Testament book, but isn't it that the Old Testament book where God and Satan decide, hey, let's have a bet.
Uh-huh.
I bet I can make this guy. Let's fuck with this guy. Let's like totally ruin his life. And God's like, I bet he won't lose faith in me. And devil's like, I bet he will.
Yeah, so I bet I can totally jerk this guy around and destroy his life, and he'll still come crawling back to me.
Boy, is that sick on so many levels.
So this is Dean. I hope this is not an indication of how Dean plans to run his administration. We've already got the Bush administration doing enough of that shit.
For the American people,
hey, look,
still come begging to me.
I bet we can alienate every single last one of our allies. And at the end, they'll still buy Britney Spears CDs.
Well, I think the point here is not that Job is a horrible book, because, I mean, a lot of the Bible is horrible, but Dean called it his favorite New Testament book, which really kind of embarrassed himself.
Dean now has his own Bushism to his credit.
And then he said, but I don't like the way it ends. In some of the books of the New Testament, the ending of the book of Job is different. There's one book where there's a more optimistic ending, which we believe was tacked on later.
At least he didn't tack on an E at the end of the job.
Well, he screwed that up, too. But
he's off on his own, alternate universe version of the Bible or something.
Yes. Well, the candidate later returned an hour later to confess his error. Job is in the Old Testament, not the New. And beyond that slip, his recollection of one book where there's more optimistic ending is muddled. What actually happens is that the book of Job has an upbeat ending, which is after getting destroyed, basically. You know, he gets twice as many cattle and twice as many kids and twice as many wives or whatever as he had before. So, you know, it's like, well, but see, he trusted God, so it was okay. Actually, apparently scholars believe that maybe, you know, that was kind of thrown in as sort of a Steven Spielberg ending to the Stanley Kubrick version of Job. If you know what I mean?
That's awful. All right.
They focus grouped that book of the Bible back in, 1,000 years ago, and a lot of the respondents just walked out at the scene. So they said, we have to go back and recut this. And the new ending just went over.
Job ends up at the bottom of an ocean praying to a blue fairy? What kind of an ending is that?
So they had to do all these reshoots, and, it was just messed up.
He had the right idea, but, I mean, geez, I wish it weren't necessary for candidates to at least pretend that they know the Bible so that they can get elected.
It shouldn't matter. It should be, can you do the damn job? Can you balance a budget? Can you keep the country safe? You know, are you qualified to do the work?
Yeah. Can you actually run the country?
Yeah.
Well, I got a segue from this.
Okay. You go, sir.
Yeah. Is your favorite NT story the one about how you kill the Swedish foreign prime minister, Anna Lindh? from The Guardian. The man who has confessed to killing Swedish foreign minister Anna Lindh said Jesus told him to kill her, police said today. Well, are they going to add conspiracy to the list of crimes committed here, then, in this case?
Well, if Jesus died for all of our sins, I guess he died for the conspiracy people as well.
Let's see. Jeff Leif Jenkvist, the Stockholm police commissioner who led the murder investigation, told reporters that Mr. Majelovic...
I think that's
Milosevic had made up his mind to kill Ms. Lindh during roughly 14 minutes between seeing her enter the central Stockholm department store, and the murder. He decided to kill her, and he did it. He says he did it at the command of an inner voice belonging to Jesus. Mr. Milosevic told prosecutors, "I think it is Jesus that he has chosen me," when asked why he killed Mrs. Lynn, according to a transcript of the January 6th confession. Ms. Lynn, a leading pro-Euro campaigner touted as a future prime minister, was stabbed 10 times in the attack on September 10th last year and had stab wounds on her chest, stomach, and arms. She later died from her injuries.
Wow. And it's Jesus' fault.
Yeah.
He issued the command, we are led to believe.
He gave the order.
He gave the order. And now, that order has as much evidence behind it as anything else that Jesus said.
Now, he could just be saying this in the hopes of, I can cop an insanity plea if I say this. This could be a completely calculated move. I don't know. He could just be some raving asshole.
But it wouldn't be the first time that someone, killed somebody and said they did it because Jesus told them to.
True. But he could just be like, I'm not saying he's not a loon, but he could be thinking to himself, I can get, they'll find me insane if I say this, and I'll get like a reduced sentence, or I'll get to stay in some cushy hospital.
You know how it is.
Do they execute this week?
Love thine enemies, heal the sick, give to those who ask for it, and kill the Swedish prime minister.
Right. Yes. Well, they say Mr. Milovic was born in Sweden to Serbian parents, goes on trial on Wednesday, and faces between 10 years and life in prison if convicted of the murder. But there is another guy involved in this murder, Jesus. And we have no record of him being, I don't think they put out an APB on him or anything.
Jesus made me do it. I just saw her skin here and just saw her.
No.
I didn't hear the boys. I didn't hear him going, do it, kill her.
Yep, this is one of those situations where the court needs to decide, well, does Jesus exist and issue orders to people, or doesn't he?
Yeah,
because
if he does, then somebody needs to stop him.
Yeah, that's right.
No. I think it's just a jerk trying to, cop a plea and give himself a life.
I can't... To say that, I would have to just arbitrarily contradict what he says about himself. I can't do that. I'm not in a position to do that. So I have to go by what he says.
Okay.
If he says he's a Christian, well, he's a Christian.
If
he says Jesus spoke to him and told him to kill that person, well, I have to accept that. I have to accept that's what he believes.
There we go.
Right. You wouldn't want to follow man's laws over God's laws if God tells you to kill somebody.
That's very true. Must acknowledge
to do it.
Higher authority.
That's the only information I have concerning his motives.
Right. Well, I think I'll do one.
Yeah, go for it.
Please.
I'm going to move slightly afield here. Not quite so much... Not explicitly political. But in some ways it is. 7th grade social studies teacher in Presque Isle, and I'm not exactly sure where Presque Isle is, but this is from a website, pressherald.com, so I guess that's just a local newspaper from wherever it's from. Oh, it would be Maine, I think, because they mentioned Bangor.
Okay.
All right, this would be Maine. Way up where it's like 9 zillion degrees below zero right now. Anyway, a 7th grade social studies teacher in Presque Isle who said he was barred from teaching about non-Christian civilizations has sued his school district, claiming it violated his First Amendment right of free expression. Gary Cole of Washburn, a teacher at Skyway Middle School, sued School Administrative District 1 in U.S. District Court in Bangor. Cole alleged that complaints by, quote, a small group of fundamentalist Christian individuals... Always some. That small group.
Out of the woodwork.
Yeah, they just go from place to place around the country, little group.
That small group.
Led to the creation of a curriculum, quote, which never mentions religions other than Christianity and never teaches the history of civilizations other than Christian civilizations. He can't even teach the history of anti-Semitism or the history of ancient Greece, said Cole's lawyer, A.J. Grief. Great name for a lawyer, Grief. A.J. Grief of Bangor.
How can you explain the evolution of democracy in the Western world without talking about ancient Greece? He can't talk about all the influences of the Indian, Japanese, or Chinese cultures. That's not pretty insane. I mean, you're basically pretending the rest of the world.
Crazy.
You're pretending that 90% of world history didn't happen.
Is he allowed to talk about the Egyptians since it's in the Bible? Wow.
Well, they don't mention that.
Huh.
Well, like, I guess ancient Japanese civilizations would be strictly prohibited.
Right.
That's one of the things they indicate. Jeez. Superintendent Gary Johnson said on Tuesday he had not seen the lawsuit, but he knows the curriculum has been developed by teachers across the district and adopted by the SAD1 school committee.
Quote, unquote.
Cole's lawsuit alleges that the curriculum infringes on, quote, his students' First Amendment rights to the free flow of information within the classroom, and that it constitutes an illegal establishment of religion in violation of the First Amendment. Greif said that when Cole has gone outside the prescribed curriculum, he has been reprimanded and given warnings that he could lose his job. He said the district is imposing curricular choices upon the students that are framed by one particular religion in the community. Cole had been teaching a broader curriculum at one point, but during the past several years, members of a church group, quote, had been complaining and attempting to get the curriculum confined to a history of Christian civilization, not the civilization of the Eastern Hemisphere, the lawyer said. Greif said Cole wasn't trying to teach anything unusual or anything that wasn't being taught in most seventh grades across the state. His lawsuit seeks injunctive relief to allow him to teach the history of the entire Eastern Hemisphere as appropriate. Anyway, he goes on to say that, you know, Maine Department of Education says that, you know, the rules really ought to allow, you know, districts flexibility, et cetera, et cetera. But if true, this is nuts. I mean, this is now, it's gone beyond biology and origins and evolution versus creationism. Now we have this little group of Christians, apparently, in Maine, who are trying to say, no, we can't teach about ancient Greece. We can't teach about, you know, pre-Christian Europe, or we can't teach about the history of the African nations, or about
about the entire Eastern Hemisphere.
Yeah, and as far as the, you know, this damn, you know, slanty-eyed dukes over there in China and Japan and Korea and all them places.
Well, this is what
they might as well not exist. They don't exist. Forget it.
This is what happens if you give Christians an inch.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, we know that they're trying to take over the school curriculum. I mean, look at our school board meeting. At our school board meeting in September.
The first that I've heard them try to now influence world history. Evolution, you expect to happen.
It's not the first. You remember the Texas Freedom Network talked to us before.
Oh, yeah.
And well, they were showing us that some textbooks, like, you know, they were set. The Christian groups were trying to get the textbooks altered because, like, they showed images of women going to work.
Yeah, well, a woman in a business suit. Yeah.
Yes. You know, African-American people looking happy or something like that.
Yeah, like a happy, well-structured African-American family. Yeah, just madness, right?
They were against that.
Just a bunch of old bigots.
So, you know, it's not just evolution they're going after. They would like to take over the entire educational system, and if you let them, then they will.
Brainwash everybody.
So, So that's just crazy. So, we'll try to follow this one, because it's...
That's important.
Yeah, it's with Bush in the White House and with, you know, faith-based everything on the agenda. It's like, you know, they're just... It's emboldening them more and more.
Let's see. So what is Bush doing these days? Well,
being a complete bastard. Sorry, watching your ones too much.
No, I mean these days. Oh. Instead of always.
Oh, okay.
On Thursday, as hundreds of protesters shouted objections, President Bush laid a wreath Tuesday at the tomb of Martin Luther King Jr. on a visit to mark what would have been the 75th birthday of the slain civil rights leader. The president bowed his head in respect at the tomb as police worked to block protesters who pushed past barricades. Two people were arrested. So that's a nice way to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. Why was he there? Bush in New Orleans had pressed his plan to let religious charities compete for more federal dollars. He said, "The miracle of salvation is the key to solving some of society's most intractable problems."
Oh, I thought preemptive war was one of the key ways of solving.
Preemptive war and the miracle of salvation. Those are two.
Defense.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
The
yeah,
two keys to solving some of society's most intractable problems: the miracle of salvation and preemptive war.
Among our weapons are. Wait, I'll come in again.
Bush used himself as an example of the good that religion can do, referring to his decision.
Well, he's half right.
Referring to his decision to stop drinking at age 40 because I changed my heart.
Oh, so, oh.
He is an example of what religion can do, all right.
Yeah, he stopped drinking at age 40. Well, good for him.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Well, but before 40, you see, he hadn't had religion.
I'm before 40. I haven't had religion, and I don't snort blow, and I don't get drunk, and I...
Hey, what a shock.
Gas.
I don't drink.
So maybe religion doesn't have a damn thing to do with it.
You need Jesus so you can start.
Yeah. Well, if I thought I had to appease the unknowable wishes of a gigantic being who can throw me into a pit of hell, I might take to drinking.
Remember, I've said this before, but I'll just toss it out very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time I hear one of these stories about how, you know, Jesus saved me from a life of drinking drugs and woe and despair, and sort of like, you know, I've always thought that not only do I not need religion or a belief in God to tell me that it's wrong to be like an alcoholic, coke-snorting wife beater,
mm-hmm.
I don't particularly think I want to know the kinds of people. I don't want to know or hang out with the kind of people who need religion or a belief in God to think that...
To keep them from doing
it. Yeah, to realize that it's wrong to be an alcoholic.
Yeah, you hear all these conversion stories about what awful people they were, and you're like, man, Christianity appeals to some horrible people.
That's right. You can get away with anything.
Yep.
All you have to do is accept Jesus, so you're forgiven what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're a sinner by default, so...
That's right.
Okay, so now I suspect
why hold back?
I suspect that a lot of these protests during the MLK day...
Yeah, why were they protesting?
Well, because
Bush is clearly doing... I mean...
It's just a photo op?
Basically, this thing that Bush was doing was to compensate for the fact that, like, only 9% of all black people would vote for him.
Ah, yes.
Which is the worst, you know, race record that any Republican president has had.
But there's also just this offensive notion that here's... You know, a president who has just led us on this dubiously justified, to put it politely, war, you know, and he's paying homage to, you know, Martin Luther King, who was all about peace and love and understanding, right? And it's just the most blatant political hypocrisy that, you know, that he would do this.
Right, but the story mentions that, you know, every time he wants to push one of these faith-based initiatives, he always goes to a black church somewhere because it's a photo op to make it look like he's not just trying to appeal to white conservative, to white fundamentalists. And you know, the reason he appears in black churches is because the white fundamentalists look at him and say, oh, that guy has good relations with black people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because obviously it's not working for the actual people in the black churches.
Evidently not, if they're, like, storming the barricades and having his...
Yeah, they were outside beating drums, chanting, go home, Bush, and waving signs saying, war is not the answer, and Bush no more in 2004.
That's a good
chance. Yeah.
My attitude, getting back to the faith-based initiatives thing, my attitude is, he said, the government should not fear faith-based programs. We ought to welcome faith-based programs, and we ought to fund faith-based programs, he said, from the pulpit of the Pact Union Bethel AME Church in a crime-plagued neighborhood near this city's downtown. Faith-based programs are only effective because they do practice faith. It's important for our government to understand that.
Yeah, but exactly how effective are they? Is there any data out there to support the notion that faith-based social programs are any better at, you know, getting people away from, you know, getting off the wayward path of life than similar programs that are ecumenical or secular or purely scientific or whatever.
I don't know what, but even if I did see such data, I would be highly skeptical of how they slanted it.
Yeah. Because we already know they cooked the books on that prison thing.
The prison thing. And you know, in general, you know, they get to choose who comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people, I mean, as it is now, people who go to these faith-based things, when they're not government-funded, they can just pick anyone off the street. I mean, you know, only the people who voluntarily come in would get counted in their statistics. So people who voluntarily come in to get help,
right,
you know, they're naturally going to have a better success rate with them than everyone else who, you know, a government program has to help everyone and not discriminate on the basis of other things.
Yeah, that's one of those, what I tell people who think psychics are the real deal.
Yeah,
I always tell them, it's like, well, first off, you have to understand something. People who willfully go to a psychic, you know, they're believers anyway, right? Skeptics don't go see psychics for any reason. You know?
Yeah.
And there's one thing that the psychic knows about you the minute you walk in his door, and he can know this about you without even being psychic, right? He knows two things, actually. He knows that you believe in his powers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're there,
right?
And he knows that then you are going to listen to everything he has to say in a trusting.
I'm sensing that people call you gullible sometimes.
How did he? God, he saw right through me.
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. So, I mean, people willingly, you know, take a partake in a faith-based program. And they're believers anyway.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
it's going to work.
Yes.
And unlike the government programs, the faith-based programs aren't obligated to just take
bum
off the street.
The Reverend Barry W. Lynn has a relevant comment. He's the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, as I'm sure you know. He said Bush is trying to overturn two centuries of church-state separation required by the Constitution and institute taxpayer-subsidized job discrimination by allowing taxpayer-funded groups to hire and fire based on their religious beliefs.
Uh-huh.
So Lynn's perspective is these aren't going to be any different from regular charity work, except that they get to discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For Bush, the issue is aimed at appealing to two important constituencies, religious conservatives who make up his base of support, and black voters, only 9% of whom supported him in 2000.
Yes, well, he's probably going to have they don't seem very happy with him right, because with this recent trip, so I can't imagine that 9% will get much higher.
Right.
Yeah, they don't seem terribly impressed.
Bush is coming across like anybody see Undercover Brother?
No, I avoided that one.
It's worth renting. Okay. But there's like the token white guy who tries to be black and hip and, you know, down with the, you know, and he's played
black
by
Bush.
Yeah, and he's and the actor who plays him in the movie is great. It's the guy who played, I can't remember his real name, he played Doogie Howser.
Oh,
that actor?
Okay.
Yeah, so he plays so it's funny. So Bush is like makes me think of that character.
Yeah.
Like what it is, Holmes.
Bush can't talk fast enough, though, to pull that off.
I just want Bush to do something as mind-numbingly dumb as his dad did. Like, go to a supermarket and marvel over the laser scanner.
Yes. What are you talking about? Bush does dumb things every day.
No, but that was just
choking
so
on a potato chip, not good enough for you?
No, Bush Senior. When he like went to a supermarket one time. Like when he was in office, he was on one of his, I don't know if he was something or
not.
But he went into a supermarket to be like, well, I want to be man of the people. I'll go visit. So he goes in, and for the first time in his life, he sees you know, he's never seen that before. And he's like, look at how the thing does the thing.
Did you ever wonder what those little bars on all the products were?
And of course, it was just like,
it's not.
I mean, Jay Leno.
They're the mark of the Antichrist.
3 weeks worth out of, you know, just that alone, right?
Well, do you want a surreal story now? Or?
Yeah, do a surreal story and I'll follow it.
Here's something that sounds like it comes from The Onion, but actually it comes from the fair and balanced Fox News. ACLU comes to Rush Limbaugh's defense.
Whoa!
I wonder how Bill O'Reilly's going to spend that one.
I don't know. West Palm Beach, Florida.
talk radio host Rush Limbaugh probably never expected the American Civil Liberties Union to become
a staunch supporter. The American Civil Liberties Union.
Wait, ACLU, evil, Rush, evil, conservative, wait, no, wait, Rush no, must be can't. Liberal. No, wait, does but, not compute.
But the privacy rights group was on his side Monday, and its Florida branch filed a friend of court motion on behalf of Limbaugh, arguing state officials were wrong in seizing his medical records for their drug probe. Let's applaud the ACLU once again, shall we?
They are better people than I am.
They are better people than Rush Limbaugh is, that's for sure. But we have always said that the ACLU's real client is the Bill of Rights, and we will continue to safeguard the values of equality, fairness, and privacy for everyone, regardless of race, economic status, or political point of view.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing Simon to see said. How O'Reilly tries to spin this one, because, of course, he's... Every time he identifies the ACLU on his show, every time he mentions it, as the most dangerous organization in America.
Yes.
And so,
the most dangerous organization in America defended Rush Limbaugh.
So this will be, very, very funny to see how, the Fox Spinmeisters try to.
The ACLU contends that state law enforcement officers violated Limbaugh's privacy rights by taking possession of his medical records as part of their criminal investigation into the commentator's alleged doctor shopping to feed his prescription drug addiction. So, yeah, it says, the precedent set in this case will impact the security of medical records and the privacy of the doctor-patient relationship of every person in Florida.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're going for this for completely reasonable reasons.
And I'm sure that all the, the neocon Fox crowd is just, they're sitting there scratching their heads in utter confusion. They're like, it's sort of like, if you're out with your buddies at night, you just go out to some bar and you're watching a football game, right? Mm-hmm. And then you turn to the door and you see this, like, amazingly hot chick just walk into the bar all by herself. And she sits down at the bar all by herself. And you all just kind of sit there and saying to yourself, no, this isn't happening. It's a joke. the other shoe's about to drop in a minute. I'm going to get up to go over there, introduce myself, and her 6'9" black boyfriend is going to walk in.
Right.
Something, right?
That's going
to waiting for the other shoe to drop. Uh-huh. Where's the joke? I mean, so there's this whole, the ACLU is defending Rush.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The other shoe is about to drop somewhere.
Of course, everybody's aware that investigators seized the records last month after discovering that Limbaugh received more than 2,000 painkillers prescribed by four doctors at a pharmacy.
Perhaps the reason that the ACLU is so often defending liberals and like atheists and other people that they consider evil is that conservatives and fundamentalists are the ones who are most likely to trample all over people's rights. Ever right. think of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
now that right tromping is starting to spill over into the conservatives, and they're going, oh, wait a minute, not me.
Well, now, in fairness, it can swing both ways, right? I thought that a lot of what went on in the 90s with the whole trend in political correctness did a lot of rights stomping coming from the left. Just in terms of freedom of speech issues, right? It seemed like political correctness basically was, you can't say anything that offends, could possibly offend.
Is that why Huckleberry Finn got banned? When was that? I mean, Huckleberry Finn has the word nigger in it, and I remember
There's actually been debate on that from both sides, but that's been going on for years.
Right.
But again, it's these things where, you can't say anything at all that could possibly offend a black person or a Latino or a gay or a lesbian person, and if you do, we have to shut you up and shut you down. But if you're, just a white heterosexual guy from the suburbs, well, then, we can razz on you all we like.
Right.
So that was unfair, too. And I saw that as kind of being, that's kind of unfairness coming from the left. But that was like in early 90s. That's 10 years ago. And now the pendulum.
It's kind of a nudge, wink, wink kind of.
Societal, it's a pendulum, right? It swings both ways. We have a liberal generation followed by a more conservative one, and then the pendulum swings back to liberal. Now we're on the conservative swing. So who knows what the 2010s will look like.
I don't know.
But they do make lasting.
Authentic Poppy in the chat room
impression.
Is mentioning that the ACLU has also defended Jerry Falwell, which I don't remember.
Maybe you could remind us of what that case is, Chatter.
He'll hear that in a couple minutes.
Well,
You're right, though. That is very close to an Onion article. There's that one Onion article that ACLU defends
Rush Limbaugh.
KKK's right to burn down ACLU headquarters. That's awesome. Well, I've got some surrealism, and then we'll get back to some more serious news. But here's just a little silliness. Okay. Oh, here we go. No, that one. All right. Paris Hilton, everybody's favorite Hummer.
Oh, boy.
Is turning over a new leaf for the new year, apparently. Party Princess has reportedly signed up for teachings in L.A.'s trendy Kabbalah Center, where Madonna and Demi Moore are regulars. The heiress was given a red string bracelet, which is supposed to fall off when negativity is purged from her system.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's... And so in her next sex video... I guess.
Plunk.
if the guy pulls out, no, I just that's a Mary joke.
Oh, come on.
Okay. The bracelet will fall
Let's
out.
Let's not go there.
That's a Mary McManamy joke. I'm sorry. She's the only person who's allowed to come up with gross jokes like that. Recent photos don't show the
bracelet. Damn, you took the tasteless comment for the week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. No, I'm sure you can try to outdo me. I won't stop you. But,
We're still around.
Oh, well.
So,
you didn't read the end of it.
Hmm? Oh, our recent photos don't show the bracelet, so she must be pure now.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah, all for joining that church.
That must be it. So she's also, maybe she's all virginal again, and it's time for another round of wild, alcohol-fueled sex orgies on video for her.
Oh, right.
I think, let's,
Are there any religions that make you, not stupid? I mean, they can make you pure, but...
I don't know.
I can't, outuse demons of stupidity. I think there's a dog bird shirt like that.
I probably still wouldn't join it because...
I don't know, but at least, some sex, give you cool things like, kung fu and stuff. But,
okay. Well, while you're digging...
On a sex theme, actually.
Oh, you want to do another? Okay, go ahead. Sex theme. Please, sir.
State's abstinence-only sex education doesn't work any better, report says.
We should not have hired Paris Hilton as teacher.
But she's pure now. We thought it was okay. The state's $5 million abstinence-only sex education program isn't working, according to an independent study commissioned by the Minnesota Department of Health. The study found that sexual activity among junior high kids at three schools where the program was taught doubled between 2001 and 2002.
Yeah, awesome. Sorry.
A pattern similar to that exhibited by kids statewide. And the number who said they would probably have sex during high school nearly doubled as well. So, in fairness... they didn't cause the doubling.
No, but it didn't do anything to effect.
Right.
And that is the argument the Bush administration is making.
Quite.
It's only sex education, and kids won't want to fuck each other anymore.
Mm.
Pipe dream, sir.
The state's five-year-old abstinence-only initiative has been taught to 45,000 Minnesota kids and is funded by state and federal dollars.
44,000 of whom are now pregnant. No.
Tell it to the hormones.
Well, and wasn't it in Al Franken's book where he says something along the effect of that, there are these Christian, of course, student outreaches. And
right.
They have their little programs, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little name. True Love Waits. Basically where they get, they join these little groups and they all make these pledges to be virgins till they get married, right?
Right.
And I think he cited a figure along the lines of upwards of 60% of those kids.
Right. How old?
Of course.
These are high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because, I'm wondering if they also teach this to 11-year-olds or something. They go in and the 11-year-olds are like, no, I don't want to ever have sex anyway. That's gross. Mm-hmm.
Well, 11, at least...
Look, it works.
I remember starting to, be pretty randy when I was 11. For boys, I think it's different. Girls, it's maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But
an old trouser mouse starts squirming around about that age.
Yeah, but, Christians are always, you know, going on rampant about how teaching real sex education, you know, makes kids more likely to have sex. I mean, you know, they're like, look, we teach these kids to use condoms. They'll think that condom, you know, they'll think that having sex is okay. And then, you know, they're always quick to trump up things about how, like, you know, condoms have a certain failure rate and you know, it's like playing Russian roulette. Yeah. Well, I got news for you guys. Abstinence has a failure rate, too.
Yeah.
And it's enormous.
Yeah. Like, when you stop being abstinent.
Well, and the kids...
Right. And if you don't learn about condoms and abstinence fails, you don't have the condoms to fall back on to keep you from getting pregnant.
Or if you've had no education in any contraceptive alternatives or just sexual health issues, you know, if you don't know about STDs, if all you've been taught about sex is, okay, don't do it, and we won't go there, okay, next.
Don't do it.
The kids who if you don't have the information, then you're going to get in trouble if you go ahead and decide to have sex, which is hard. It's hard for a teenager to.
Right. I mean, real sex education does teach about AIDS. It teaches all the statistics and stuff about how likely you are to get it, and you know, that lets people make an informed decision instead of just scaring them and saying, you know, never, ever have sex because God will be angry with you. Doesn't work.
It is a simple point of fact that, of course, abstaining from sex means that you won't have problems related to sex. But abstinence education, doesn't get kids to be abstinent. That's the key.
No.
That's the fallacy.
Carol Wolverton, Assistant Commissioner of Health, said health department officials were not surprised by the results.
Well, yeah.
We take it very seriously, she said, and we recognize that there might be more efficient ways to approach this. But it's too early to say whether the health department will try to find a way to reach sexually active kids with information about contraceptives, she said. The state risks losing the federal funding that pays for most of the program if it changes from abstinence only.
There you go.
It's Bush's fault again.
Bush's asshole is sitting on everyone.
Thank you for the visual.
Yeah, I know. I
Mr. Artist.
Wear it like a hat. Yeah.
Oh, my. Turns out this sounds like our theme music for today's show is apropos.
Sex in the Church by David Bowie.
Well, this is back to education now, but this is something that's really disturbing. In another part of the world, that a certain teacher in Maine must pretend doesn't exist. Problems in Nigeria. Nigeria is experiencing an upsurge in, of all things, polio. Which you thought that was extinct, didn't you?
Polio, yeah.
Well, what's happening, right? The World Health Organization is in a panic, right? Because they're trying to get this mass immunization campaign going on because they want to vaccinate like 250,000 children in these third world countries, of which Nigeria is one.
Right. They want to wipe out polio like it is smallpox.
Right. And they're in a bit of a panic because this is a $3 billion campaign, right? And they had a target date of 2000, and they missed that, and they're worried that this could be, like, you know, the last chance to do so. Problem is, right, in Nigeria, we have all of these radical Islamic imams telling their frightened flock that this immunization campaign is this nefarious plot from the West to, you know, do population control in Muslim countries, to depopulate Muslim countries, essentially. They're telling them things like these vaccines have, you know, anti-fertility drugs in them and stuff like that. And essentially creating a panic, and people aren't getting they aren't letting their children get immunized, they aren't getting immunized themselves, and it's a big problem. And So what we're seeing in these countries is a disturbing upsurge. You're seeing independent scientific tests carried out in South Africa and Nigeria, of course, have shown no traces of anti-fertility agents in the vaccine. Of course not, because it's all a nonsense story. Right. But it has led to neighboring countries already declared polio free. Polio free. Don't know why that was so hard to get out. Being reinfected with the virus. My mother... had polio when she was young. This was like right before the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is lucky to be an ambulatory, normal person today. I mean, she described it to me as a nightmare.
It's hurt really bad.
My grandmother basically had to, like, you know, was staying up days at a time, constantly, like, massaging her limbs and giving her the medicine, whatever medicine she could, but mainly exercising her.
Right.
So that, you know, the
no atrophy.
Right, exactly. And it was only through just that hard work. And she said your friends of hers were dropping, like, ninepins. You know, it was really, really hard. It's horrible. Horrible.
Tremendous.
You know, and simply inexcusable that, you know, again, good old fundamentalist religion can rear its ugly head and say, no, science bad. Just, you know, it's all an evil plot.
Same thing all over the world.
Yeah. Over to you.
Yeah, but this is just murdering people. I mean, no good reason.
Well, it's about keeping control over people, you know, keep them in fear so that they will find escape from that fear in thinking that they have a magic friend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Do you have anything left, Dennis?
Well, I got one thing. Not quite as depressing as that. Well,
thank goodness for that.
That previous story there, but let's see. This is from the Register in the UK. Flight sim inquiry raises terror alert. Apparently in Las Vegas, I guess. A mother's inquiry about buying Microsoft Flight Simulator for her 10-year-old son prompted a nighttime visit to her home from a state trooper.
Uh-oh.
Julie Oliersek, a USAF reserve pilot, made the inquiry at a Staples store in Massachusetts, home to an earlier bout of hysteria, during the Salem witch trials. Yeah, kind of earlier. Yeah, earlier in the... A couple of centuries earlier. So alarmed was the Staples clerk at the prospect of the 10-year-old learning to fly that he informed the police, the Greenfield Recorder reports. The authorities moved into action, leaving nothing to chance. A few days later, Oliersek was alarmed to discover a state trooper flashing a torch into her home through a sliding glass door at 8:30 p.m. on a rainy night.
Oh.
I might mention that torch means flashlight over there in the UK.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, this came from The Guardian, didn't it?
That's right. Oliersek is a regular Staples customer and schools her son at home. The Staples manager simply explained that staff were obeying advice.
From an idiot.
From an idiot, apparently. Before Christmas, the FBI issued a terror alert to beware of drivers with maps or reference books.
But drivers with maps?
And reference books?
Be aware for drivers with maps?
Yes.
That's everybody on the highway
Everybody on the highway in America.
Yeah, that's like 98% of drivers.
Well, that's good advice.
If they're going to get arrested for getting flight simulators, they should also get arrested for, you know, playing Project Gotham Racing or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, they're simulating driving. They must be learning how to drive so they can drive into buildings.
And driving is just a way to get a map.
Or an almanac.
You can't have them getting maps or reference books.
This is just like, this is stupidity taking the new levels.
Oh, it's beyond belief. At reference books. It's like, we must take all reference books away from students because... At one time, it was rare to find U.S. citizens in the safest and most prosperous country in the world jumping at their own shadows. Now we only note how high. Now that's a rather peculiar... editorial at the end of the story, but it works.
Now, the level of paranoia in this country is just getting mind-numbingly stupid.
Yeah.
At a certain point. My parents have...
Well, it's fair and balanced paranoia.
Fairly imbalanced. My parents have a dear friend, a lover to death, Barbara. I call her my Aunt Barbara.
Uh-huh.
And she's from Georgia. I mean, live across the street from my parents in their hometown, right? And she's a hoot, just hilarious. You know, I mean, you take every single actress that was in one of these, you know, Southern movies, like, you know, Steel Magnolias.
Right,
Put them all together, and they still couldn't quite be as flamboyant as she is, just
in
her Southern hilariousness, right? Okay, well, she's like 70-something, right? Has had both hips replaced.
hip replacement surgery on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally, her last name's Hooker, Barbara Hooker. And she said, I'm
oh boy.
And she said, I'm the town's only hooker and I ain't even got all my pods. That's her line.
But she's, great.
So she's great, right? But she was in an airport, right? Going flying to the Hondas, uh-huh. right? And she's had both hip, so she walks through the deal.
Beep.
And the thing goes off like, you know.
Right.
Bleep, bleep.
Sirens.
And they start trying to give her a hard time. And, boy, I wish I were there. Because according to eyewitness reports, she tore this poor kid, you know, in the cap and the little badge about, you know, six new rectums. And, you know. So I'm 72 years old. I've had both hips replaced. I got a pacemaker. You so goddamn ignorant. You think I'm an Arab terrorist? And blah, blah, blah. Just went on and on. And just, and everyone's standing there in awe. And her husband, my dad said that they finally let him go. Just shut her up. And he said, like, the security supervisor was actually kind of standing there, like, you know, like, cracking up, sort of
right.
under his breath. And he said, I don't want to be here when, like, the real robots start killing us. But,
well, terrorists take note. Be a 72-year-old lady and make a big scene. And you'll
maybe that's the way to get a girl. Now they'll arrest me for giving out that hint. But it's just
like I'm carrying an Uzi with armor-piercing projectiles.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Just an indication of how amazingly stupid this whole country has gotten, just in terms of the levels of... I mean, and now we're, I mean, they were taking away Granny Lady's nail clippers at first, and now, mm-hmm. I mean, if a kid buys a damn video game...
That's right.
Suddenly mm-hmm. it's like their cops are shining flashlights through the windows. I mean, oh, what is happening to this country? Russell.
I don't know.
Oh.
But I Russell is happening story. To this country.
I thought that was a nice kind of passing.
It is. It's good. Yeah.
See, if this were real newscast, he would have had something ready. For
yes, I would have. But this is merely a simulated newscast.
Oh, I see.
Well, it's coming his way.
And therefore, dangerous.
Uh-oh, okay.
And I better make this story last at least 9 minutes.
Okay. I have 11 after.
Okay. Bush's push for marriage falls short for conservatives.
We just
can't get enough Bush today. Some
back
major conservative...
He's the premier fundamentalist.
Some major conservative Christian group said yesterday that they were pleased but not satisfied by a new White House initiative to promote marriage, and they stepped up pressure on President Bush to champion a constitutional amendment prohibiting same-sex marriage in his State of the Union speech next
week.
They
won't be satisfied by anything other than... Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, I don't think constitutional amendments that prohibit things have been a resounding success. I mean, the majority of amendments have been involved with protecting people's rights to do things.
Right.
Whereas, like, the one I can think of that says that no citizen may do this got overturned a few years later.
And what was the prohibition?
Yes.
That was
that's the one.
And we see how well that worked.
Yeah. Oh, if you were
set up all sorts of criminal activity.
Yeah, nobody drank any more alcohol.
It was a resounding success.
It was
if
great.
If you were the Gambinis or, you know, the Chicago mob.
Marvelous.
You loved Prohibition.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, it set up criminal organizations that exist to this day.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Baptist Temperance Ladies groups, for creating the mafia in America.
Idiots.
This is like lobbing a snowball at a forest fire, said Sandy Rios, president of Concerned Women of America, one of the largest conservative Christian advocacy groups. This administration is dancing dangerously around the issue of homosexual marriage. So what are Concerned Women of America so concerned about, that there won't be any eligible men to...
As I understand it...
I don't know what their objection is.
I've heard something to the effect that that the majority of the board of directors of Concerned Women for America are men. I
wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
actually,
there are more men running that organization than...
I tell you, though, I have yet to hear a convincing argument why gay marriage should be prohibited, except, well then people would be gay.
It would be icky.
Like,
No, see, there's gay people already, and they want to, do the, you know, marriage thing, because they love each other, too. And
mm-hmm. like, when a man and a man love each other very much, you see.
Well, you know, here's something interesting was brought up last week about, always get back to blonde bimbos. Sorry, just me.
you know, Britney's little 2-day marriage in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And more than one commentator in the media,
mm-hmm.
you know, made, you know, remarked upon how ironic it is, okay, that here we have this country where it's perfectly, you know, legal for, you know, bimbo pop starlets to make a mockery of the institution of marriage by
right.
getting wasted in Vegas and hanging out with some guy and saying, oh, hey, Ivan, what a great idea. Let's go get married, right? That's fine. We can
and then getting yeah. divorced, what yeah. was it, 55
right.
hours later.
But if a committed gay or lesbian couple decide they want to tie the knot and share a life together, somehow that threatens the whole institution of marriage.
Right. That's evil somehow.
Yeah. But Brittany can go off and you know... In,
it's a forest fire.
In a state of extreme wastedness, you know, do
yeah.
and do her thing and say, you know, and come up with this annulment where her lawyer says something like, my client did not have any comprehension of her actions. It's like, oh, fine, but we want to make it legal for her to get married and, you know...
Yeah,
yes.
But it's fine because as long as... No.
I have to read Wicked Pilot's summary of the show today.
Go for it.
So let's get this all into accounting. Bush wants to fund a war, put a man on Mars, give money to black churches, and now pay for people to get divorced. Small government, here we come.
Yeah.
A terrific magazine called The Economist. I've actually become yes. something of a fan of it because I've been buying it for my dad because he can't get it where he lives. So I buy it soon.
English news magazine.
Yeah. And there's an article in there that I'm like, it's next on my list to read, but where they talk about big government conservatism under Bush and how it isn't working. So I'm quite eager to read that. But,
let's see. What else? Yeah. What else are the concerned women for America saying? The conservative Christians' insistence on an amendment to prohibit same-sex marriage may put President Bush in a political bind as he starts his re-election campaign, caught between wooing potential swing voters and turning out his core evangelical supporters. Some conservative strategists warn that pushing to amend the Constitution to prohibit same-sex unions could turn off some potential Republican voters, like suburban women who might find excessive talk about the perils of same-sex marriage as intolerant, mean-spirited, or weirdly obsessive.
That last one is
good.
You know, I have
an accurate depiction.
Yeah. I have to say on a personal note that hearing Bush talk hearing Bush being pressured to do this stuff cheers me up. Because... You know, he won by a very narrow margin in 2000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But part of the reason why he won was because he was campaigning as this centrist, middle-of-the-road, all-around nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And people bought it.
We didn't quite know how stupid he was.
Yeah, but regardless of that, he was like, I'm not, you know, an extremist, fundamentalist, wacko, you know, gay marriage prohibiting...
right.
You know, church funding asshole.
I just play one on TV.
But now we know that you are.
Well,
yeah. So, I mean, people keep saying that this or that Democrat can't possibly win in 2000. I'm not sure.
Just, we just need a few more really great cataclysmic cock-ups from the administration.
Only hope a wave of common sense sweeps the country.
Yes. On the other hand, as somebody in the chat room said earlier, if he gets reelected and then doesn't have another reelection to worry about, think of what he'll do then.
We're trying not to. Is the
Zoinks.
Okay.
Well, that's a downer note.
Follow up with our pal Mike.
You got
Goodell.
Three minutes.
3 minutes? Okay.
Yeah,
oh, that's right.
Three and a half.
Just quickly, a date has been set for oral arguments in one of the nation's most highly watched legal cases. Michael Newdow's Pledge of Allegiance suit, of course, March 24th.
Mark your calendars, people.
Attorneys for the Oak Grove School District will square off with Sacramento atheist Dr. Michael Newdow in front of the Supreme Court.
Hopefully Jeff D. will have an amicus briefing.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to the last episode of Nonprofits from two Saturdays ago, download it from the atheistcommunity.org website, hyphencommunity.org, because he talks about all those amicus briefs That's what the amicus briefs that
the theist sent.
The pro-theocracy people have filed, and very interesting there. So March 24th, mark your dates on your PDAs or whatever you use.
All right.
What else have we, Mr. Host?
Let's see. Well, Jeff D. will be back in 2 weeks, we presume.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually back now, as far as I know, but he didn't want to rush over to the show.
Oh, really?
So,
looks like we've had a hell of a lot of chatters
today. We have. It's been a very busy. I counted 25 people in the chat room. Haven't had time to check how many people were listening.
Well, thanks for listening if you were listening and if you were just chatting.
No, don't say goodbye yet. We still got 2 minutes.
Well, okay.
Or we could just knock off early and go get some beer.
I'm done. Well, thanks for having me.
Let's see. Let's see. There was something terribly interesting.
Bush is talking about going into space.
Going into space.
Big space program. My opinion on that is, darn it, I don't care why he's doing it, just as long as we have a space race.
Yeah, sure.
I think he just wants Halliburton to have all the non-bid contracts for the moon base.
That must be it. They found weapons of mass destruction for the Mars rover, and they have to go there and find them.
Yeah.
One other thing about the condom subject that I just remembered. I was in a message group this week when somebody mentioned, when some hysterical person wrote, you know, oh, condoms have only an 80% success rate, which was not true to begin with.
Yeah.
But then they said, so that's like every time you play a condom, you use a condom, you've got a 20% chance of getting a virus. Imagine getting on a plane and knowing there was only a 20% chance that you would reach their destination. And I said,
wait, that's backwards.
So there's a 100% chance that you'll die if you have sex without a condom?
Right.
Ever heard of multiplying statistics, lady?
Yeah. Boy.
That's
and
crazy.
What's left? Are we done?
I guess we are. You're the man who...
What was that about Mel Gibson?
His movie opens on 2,000 screens, which is very high.
Oh, I thought it was open already.
No, it opens Ash Wednesday.
Okay.
I think it's going to have a record February opening. There's enough controversy. Controversy certainly didn't hurt Last Temptation.
That's true. I mean, I'm considering seeing it.
The trailers look gorgeous. If nothing else, it'll be a well-done, dramatically done film.
Yeah.
And...
Make him
lots of money. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Though the idea of concoction is said to be the human cry.
And since I didn't mention it, this is Sex in the Church by David Bowie once again.